Welcome to Ink and Peat, a podcast where memoir and Ireland share the stage. We talk with authors, guides, ghostwriters, and other free spirits drawn to memoir or enchanted by Ireland. I'm Barb Robitaille.
And I'm Craig Stewart.
Artist Una Morris chats with us on this Ink and Peat episode about how the pursuit of art has shaped her life, both as a creative outlet and as a vehicle or an opportunity to extract meaning from memory, real or imagined. While it can be said that art speaks for itself, Una adds insight to her powerful yet ephemeral pieces, brilliantly articulating the inspiration behind her projects, choice of materials, and her insatiable hunger to engage fully in what life has to offer.
I'm thrilled Una will be joining us on the tour this year, and she's going to do some collage work with our people. She's asked them to bring a piece of fabric and a photograph. She'll help us sort of get into the memoir mood.
I can't imagine.
Yeah,
I'm really looking forward to that. And I think we have that the second day of the retreat.
Second day.
And to really support us in awakening that muse and having an experience of really looking at memory.
Yeah, you know, she talks about memory, real or imagined, as you said. And what a great concept.
It's been with me all week.
Trying to put that into, or using that to create story. And art from the story.
And song. I mean, I can see how it can just find its way into all aspects of our lives.
Yeah.
But of course, especially on the retreat, having to do with memoir and thinking back. And her art evokes that place in us. And she creates it in such a way, as she so articulately explains. Mm-hmm. But it opens the imagination. There's space there for the person viewing the art that she's created to find a place for themselves in it. And that, of course, is what memoir is about as well.
Absolutely. I just want to remind you that when you and I have a disagreement in terms of memory, real or imagined,
careful.
I'm not sure where to go with that. I think your memory is probably more real than mine.
That's right. Good choice.
Yeah. And one last thing I would have to say, the thing that's been staying with me all week is, and I apologize out there to those of you that are listening, and I'm breaking the first rule of podcasting, I apologize for the quality of my sound input. I was on the road and I didn't have proper tools. However, Una's answers are so articulate and so brilliant that I simply had to forego the lack of quality just so that you could hear Una.
It was a good call.
I think so. Just ignore the guy behind the mic and listen to Una. She's lovely. She has so many beautiful things to say.
She does. And so now it's time to put the kettle on and have a listen to Una Morris.
My guest today is Una Morris, who lives just outside of Killala in County Mayo. Una is an artist, a friend, and a lovely person to get to know. So that are going to be joining us on the tour, you have a real treat in store for you. I would suggest before we even begin that you turn your computers on, get to unamorrisvisualartist.wordpress.com so you can see Una's artwork. It is really powerful and will give you a sense of who we're talking with, of Una. So Una, hello, welcome.
Hello. Thank you for the lovely introduction.
So give us a little background. What gave you the inspiration to become a visual artist?
I suppose when I left school, I applied for art college with a really crappy portfolio, and it got me absolutely nowhere, unsurprisingly. And at the time I couldn't have gone, the way family things were at home, I actually couldn't have gone to college even if I had been accepted. Mm-hmm. So I had to go out and get a job and blah, blah, blah. And for the next 25 years, I was regularly buying art supplies and doing nothing with them, going to an odd art class here and there. And I always knew in the back of my mind, I always had a kind of an envy of people who were making art and who were good. And I always felt a hunger to do it, but I kind of put it away, you know, and family life and so on. So it took me to pretty much to the age of 46 to get back to college, 47, before I got to actually study art.
So you came at this a little little later in life.
A little bit later in life, yeah.
But it was still a burning desire for you this whole time. You knew you wanted to do it, but just didn't have the time.
It was always in the back of my mind that it was just something that I wanted to explore, and I had a hunger that I just put away for a long time, yeah.
I love that. That's great for our people to hear.
Yeah, and it's like I wasn't the oldest when I was doing the course. When I was doing my degree, there were people far older than me, and everybody got so much out of studying art and out of making art. It's been a fantastic experience, you know?
That's lovely. When you approach a piece of art, what inspires you? And what, I have two questions. What inspires
okay.
you? And what, how do you select whatever medium it is you'll be using for that piece?
So I guess I'm inspired at the moment. I'm really interested in exploring my family history, my family memories. And I've been looking a lot for the last year of my course. I was full time doing the honours degree, and I did a lot of writing and artwork on memory and the instability of memory and how we kind of gather ideas about ourselves that we think are true. And they may well be true, but they very well may be just memories that we were told about or photographs that we've seen. And so I'm really interested in investigating this instability, this fragility of memory that we have, you know, and this, how much our identity is based on our memories, do you know? And in fact, how much of that can we actually rely on as fact? And how much of it is maybe made up or built up or created?
Right. I noticed that on your website. You talk about memory, real or imagined.
Yes.
I love that. And what would you say helps you cross that line into creating more imagination about it?
I started doing a lot of work using old photographs, old family photographs. And I suppose for me, one big starting point was both my parents' history. Both my parents lost a parent around the same age. So my mother was 3 when her mum died, and my father was 5 when his father died. And they both had these hugely different life experiences after those deaths. And they were both huge histories and stories built around those experiences. And then as I got older, I started hearing different versions of those experiences. So I started to investigate photographs, and then I started to investigate what the photographs were made of. Yes, I start because we had been told a particular story about a particular family member, long, long deceased, that my entire family had kind of signed up to. And then I began to hear different versions of this woman and her life and her history. And I started to explore images to do with her and my family. And then I started remaking those photographs. I use tracing paper. I was drawing onto tracing paper and then making paintings on tracing paper using a form of tempera, which is egg yolk mixed with either pigment or just, in my case, just mixing with acrylic because I don't buy pure pigment, you know. And making these works that kind of allowed me to explore my ideas around my family and to recreate an unstable version of those photographs, if you like, that allow for other people's stories to fit in. Does that make sense?
It makes perfect sense. Yeah, I really appreciate that explanation too. I love the idea of unstable.
Yeah, so I think I found that I had to make space for other people's versions of things, and also just to make, I found in my work particularly, and this is probably more in my work than in my memories, but I found that I had to make space in my work for other people, for the viewer, for example, because I can make you know, really nice images of my family, but that's not really going to mean anything to anybody. And it's not going to allow space for the viewer to look at the work and find somewhere for them to connect or to fit or to be able to enter into the work, if you know what I mean. So I started to leave gaps. So a lot of my work, they may be portraits, but the people won't have any faces, for example, or the background will be removed so that context is taken away. So I have a little piece about photographs. It's written by a woman who's done a lot of work about memory and photography and so on. Could I just read you a sentence that she
please,
says?
Please, yes. Okay, yes.
Great, if I can just find this now. So she talks about childhood images particularly, and she says that childhood images often are manufactured from the childhood's material survivals, that it's not actually the childhood as lived, so that we manufacture our memories of childhood from the pieces that are left over, from the physical pieces that we were left with. And she talks about the idea that we don't have a continuous identity, that we have, let me get this sentence right now, that there is no continuous identity, only the act of memory that constitutes their resemblance. And that in this space between resemblance and identity, nostalgic desire arises. This idea of nostalgic desire, that we're always looking, we're hungering for this to refind our past selves, you know, and that really it doesn't exist. Do you know, we're kind of making this stuff up as we go, even though we may be based on facts, you know, do you know?
Yeah, that's right.
So I find that whole idea of trying to find it, because I moved around quite a bit as a kid, and then moved to Mayo with our, you know, and we had our family here, and suddenly heard of this idea of the home place. So people talk about where they live, they talk about their home, but they talk about their home place, which is usually their parents' home or their grandparents' home. And so they have this identity that's fixed into the land in a way that I was never aware of before, being a, you know, kind of a city kid. And I just thought this notion that you would have such a strong sense of identity connected to a place, that you actually have, as well as having a home, you have a home place, which is somewhere else entirely possibly, you know, or it might be in the field in front of you where your grandparents' house was or your parents still live. And I just thought that was incredible. Like, what is this place? And for women particularly, what is this place? You know, because women and the landscape and women in rural Ireland have, you know, there's so much stuff to investigate. Yeah, so all that became really interesting too for me.
Becoming a full-time artist devoted to your work, that helped you define your home place?
It helped me define my, I don't know, I don't have a home place, you see. I don't really don't. There is a house that I would consider my home place that's no longer in the family ownership, but it's not where I grew up. It's where my mother grew up, but I have no connection to there anymore. So is that my home place? I don't know. How do we figure out this thing if we don't have that physical material building in a physical material place? How do we figure out what home means to us? Do you know, so I'm really interested in investigating that, particularly around here in the landscape where people have been making homes for longer than lots of places in the world, you know?
Yeah. Now, it's interesting that so many of the materials you use, they lack a permanence.
Yes.
Wallpaper, fabric, yarn, photographs that are fading.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I assume that's intentional.
Yes. Wax paper, kitchen paper for cooking, you know, parchment. And a lot of the paints that I use on those, like I've some of my work. So I just had my degree show in June, and some of my works are made up of this, you know, tempera. So it's this egg based paint, and it's on plastic, you know, little plastic squares that you get on food wrappers, for example. And even when they're handled, some of the paint comes away. So even as literally as they're completed, they're starting to disintegrate in a way, you know, even though I know the plastic will probably be here long after us all, but the images are starting to disintegrate and starting to be mediated by whoever touches them, or by the world and by air, you know. And that really interests me, because I think none of us are, like, we're all so fragile. We're you know, we're here and we're gone in a split second, and how do we investigate that, and how do we unlock that notions around that idea of our fragility, you know,
yeah,
and our determination to just keep on going no matter what.
Point to my next question. You lost your beloved Alana when she was very young, and you mentioned how that's impacted you as an artist, the quality of life. So, how do you deal with something so horribly tragic?
I don't know how. It's a hard question. We dealt at the time. Alana was four and a quarter when she died, and she had been sick for 2 years. And when she was first diagnosed, I was pregnant with our last boy, who is now 16. And I think for us, we dealt with a lot of the pain because we had to keep going, because we had small children and we had a teenager. And I think it was literally one foot in front of the other for a long time. And we had amazing friends. And I think really a lot of it then was about going on and on just in a daily fashion. And I think I only started to investigate a lot of my stuff around Alana's death when I started the art course. So a lot of this has been an exploration of our memories of her. And again, back to this idea of the fragility of life. We moved here because my brother and my dad died within 2 years of each other of a genetic illness. And my brother was 36 and we had a small baby, and we were both living this life in Dublin where we were on the treadmill, you know, every day. And our kids were just going to grow up like that and be gone. So we thought, no, we need to move somewhere where life means more and feels like it means more. And there's more time to be with people. And there's more time to look around and actually appreciate the incredible place that we're in, you know. And more time to spend with our kids, even though we're probably a lot poorer than we would be if we were in Dublin, you know. Yeah. But the quality of life is just so much better. And I think the community that we live in, like, you've experienced what the people are like around here, you know. And that all helped me deal with, you know, after Alana died. But I think I really only started to investigate in terms of art making. I think starting the degree allowed me to open some of those memories and investigate them, mm-hmm. you know, probably in a way that I didn't have words for.
Right. And that's so much about what art, visual art is.
Yeah.
It?
Yeah.
Thinking about talking with you, it was a challenge to think, well, you know, art should speak for itself. And yet here I'm asking you to explain a lot of.
But, you know, when you go and you study art, that's what you spend a lot of your time. You spend a lot of time explaining stuff and learning how to explain it, because a lot of contemporary art, it's not like traditional religious or impressionist or anything, even up to, you know, probably the turn of the century, of the last century. Art now is, context has to be taken into play, into consideration, and the concepts and the materials that are used, because traditional art, they say, died after the Second World War. How could man make traditional art when such horrors had happened, you know?
Yeah.
So we need a different kind of art now, I guess. And sometimes that needs words.
Do you see a parallel writing memoir for some audience and creating art for a viewer, as opposed to just simply emoting?
Yeah, I think people make art, whether it's visual art or memoir or whatever form. I think people make art for different reasons. And I think even if we do write for ourselves, there's probably some, or paint or make work for ourselves, there's always some little part of us that is imagining somebody else that's going to experience what we're doing or witness it. Because sometimes, you know, you go to see an amazing piece of art and sometimes you just stand there and you just witness what you see. You know, and that's enough that allows you to open up and to make a connection with it. But I think I had to find a way. When I started the course, I think I had so much to throw out there that I had to find a way to step back a little bit and make space for people. Because otherwise you're just, if there's no space for somebody else to come in, if there's nowhere that they can hook onto something and say, ah, I can connect. I can, there's something in that speaks to me, you know, and there always has to be space for that. And I think really good memoir writing, you'll see where there are spaces left that people can actually step in. And even if they don't relate to the experience or they don't relate to the context, they can relate to something in the situation as a human being.
Yes.
You know, and they can have empathy with the person who's writing or making the work.
Excellent. Thank you. That was, I'm going to pull that out, that little bit out, and print it up and put it on my wall.
Thank you.
Oh, that was lovely. There are a couple of things you write in your statement of work that I find absolutely beautiful. And I'm curious, especially the last one, you talk about the terrible beauty of our existence.
Oh, yeah.
Can you talk about that a little bit?
Okay, but you know, I mean, that's not my quote. I didn't make that up. I robbed that from somewhere.
Well,
it's
a great robbery. I love it. I will do it. I'm going to start doing that too.
It's great. Actually, I read it. There's a great Jim Jarmusch thing that you should look up, and it's all about how the best art is all about stealing from other people, because once you steal something, you make it your own.
Nice.
Straight away. And there's no such thing as originality. It's all about taking somebody else's thing and making it yours. So yeah, so that quote is something I did steal from somewhere else, and I can't even remember where. but it's true, isn't it? I mean, we have this amazing life, and on the flip side of that, the most terrible, awful things happen to people every minute that we're alive. We know that these things are going on. And on the flip side of that, we could be dead in a second. And on the flip side of that, don't we have to make the most of every second that we have? Do you know? And I think that was something that really came home to me after Alana died, a long time after she died, where I just thought, if we don't live every day as if it's an important day, then we don't value all the days that she had. Do you know? And she only had four and a quarter years, but she lived a big life in that time, you know, so we need to honor that. And I think we're all the same. We all have people that we love who've died or who we've lost in some way. And I think we honor them by making the most of what we have, because we're bloody lucky to be here. Yeah. You know, we really are.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Like, we're so privileged and we're so lucky. And yet I moan about the most stupid things on a regular basis, you know?
Yeah, so do I.
Yeah.
It's good to hear you say this, yeah. Are you finding that your art, since you've gotten into art more dedicated and spending more time in it, are you finding that through your art you can actually feel more alive or feel a vibrancy or...
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I find that it's the one thing that I can get completely lost in. And I'm terrible at actually getting myself to the place where I'm sitting down making art. I find every reason to procrastinate under the sun. But I find when I can get into that space, it's just, there's nothing like it. Like, there literally, for me, there is nothing like it.
You're in a flow, the time disappears.
It's just heavenly. I got a job years ago as a graphic designer. I was lucky enough to get into a magazine, and I had one day's training. And I remember sitting down at the desk when I started the job, and I couldn't believe my luck, because I was being paid, basically, it felt like to me I was being paid to color in. You know, like I was being asked to be a child again, to look at colors, to look at images, to make things look amazing on a page. And I was getting paid to do it. You know, like, if I could get paid for my art, it would be like, it would be top notch.
Well, it's on the way, right?
Absolutely. We're all on a journey.
We're all. Exactly. Yeah. Well, Una, we're just beginning this conversation, and I can see we're rapidly coming to a close. I have two stock questions that I ask.
Okay.
One at the end. The first one is probably the harder of the two. Where have you found joy? Least expected it.
Oh, cripes.
I know. That's a tough one.
So here's, you know, more morbid stuff. When my dad died, he knew he was dying. He had been ill on and off for 12 years. And so we were aware that he had several dates he was trying to make. You know, he tried to make my birthday, which he made. Then he was going to make his birthday. And then he hoped to make my parents' anniversary the following month. But the day of his birthday, we all got to see him. He's six kids. We all got to see him. And he went into a coma that night. And he was at home with us for 5 days before he died. And those 5 days, we all moved back home. Like, we were all grown up adults and we all had families, but we all moved home. And our family were a physical, boisterous family that slagged each other all the time. But at nighttime, we used to do the whole Waltons thing. Remember the Waltons?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Good night, John boy. Good night, Mary Ellen. And so here we were back living in my parents', you know, three-bedroom, semi-detached house. Some of my brothers in their late 40s, I was 30 or whatever. And at nighttime, we were laughing our heads off because we were, good night, John boy, good night, Mary Ellen, doing the whole thing. And we sat at his bedside and we cried and we laughed and we told stories. And, do you know, I think people are just amazing. And I think human connection is where you can find joy, even in the most awful moments.
Lovely. Absolutely perfect. Now for the softball.
All right. Good.
What's on your nightstand? What are you reading?
Oh, my God. Okay. So here's two very... you might think that I have a split personality. I don't know. I have just finished an amazing chick lit novel by Marion Keyes called Rachel's Holiday. It's very old and it's about, probably the subject is addiction, but it's told in a wonderfully warm way. And I'm just starting Art as Therapy by, do you know Alain de Botton? He's a philosopher, AlainDeBotton. And he writes fabulous books and they're really easy to step in and out of. But he's a great philosophical mind, a great thinker and questioner.
Perfect. Chiclet's a real thing though.
Chiclet is a real thing, but you need good chiclet. You know what chiclet is, yeah?
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
And Marion. Helen Faulkner's reviews of chiclet. And then of course, Morag, and I mean, it's a real thing.
It's a real thing. It's a real thing. And Marion Keyes is one of the best Irish writers we have. She's an amazing writer. Oh. Huge, huge following. And she writes these books that are really, really funny and would break your heart at the same time. But they always have a happy ending because it's chick lit, right? The girl always gets the guy. So there's the security of that as well, you know.
Oh, lovely. Well, I'll put that on my list, at least. At least the happy ending part.
That I would like to see a photograph of you reading Marion Keyes. That would be good.
Okay. All right. You're on.
Okay.
Una, thank you so much for talking to me today.
It was
lovely.
Lovely to talk to you.
And we, of course, we look forward to seeing you and our people working with you.
I can't wait. I'm really looking forward to it. And as I was saying to you, I might ask you to ask them to bring a little something with them.
Yes.
That we can work with.
Yep.
Perfect.
Fabric and the photo.
Exactly. All great right. Stuff.
All the best, Una. Take care.
And you too. You too. Bye. Talk soon.
Talk soon.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Ink and Pete, a production of Memoir Tours Ireland. You can learn more about Memoir Tours and find other podcasts on our website, memoirtours.com.
And we'd love to know if you have ideas for shows or requests. We'd love to hear from you. Contact Craig or Barb at memoirtours.com.
Until next time, may you find joy where you least expect it.